with an Alliance for
this
Clean
call
Energy
is being recorded.
I will be facilitating today's conference, focusing on our filing last night with the Nuclear Regulatory Commission on St. Lucie 2 reactor. We're going to be joined by a few speakers today, very, very briefly, to give just a brief statement, and then we're going to open the line for questions. We're going to place everybody in listen-only mode for just a couple of minutes, and then we'll reopen the lines for questions. So now I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Stephen Smith with Southern Alliance for Clean Energy.
Good morning. Thank you, Jen. Again, my name is Stephen Smith. I'm the Executive Director of the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy. What I wanted to discuss with you is just where we are with this ongoing difference of opinion with FPL, I guess. Basically, when we initially raised these issues back before or right around the time that FPL took St. Lucie 2 into a refueling outage, we talked about three things. We talked about safety first. We talked about making sure that the regulatory process is followed and that you run the reactor by the books. And we talked, three, about the financial implications to ratepayers for what we believe have been imprudent decisions that FPL has made and the implications for that. We still stand by those three issues. FPL, as you know, has gotten the reactor through the outage. They had some problems. They've identified that there was additional wear, and there were other issues that came up as part of this, and they've returned the reactor to service. We asked for a stay because we felt like that there was significant concerns. We were denied that. We've also asked for a hearing, and what we have done with our filing with the NRC last night was respond to both FPL's and NRC's response to our request for a hearing. But let's talk about some very simple facts here and talk about it in context. FPL continues to operate the St. Lucie Unit 2 reactor with steam generators that are experiencing the highest level of damage of any steam generators in the United States. Unprecedented amount of damage, and there was more damage that took place in this most recent outage. FPL chose to replace the original steam generators at the St. Lucie 2 nuclear reactor with a modified design that has a number of very significant modifications in those steam generators. Those steam generators that have been modified, FPL chose not to file the proper paperwork, and they did not identify the modifications that were made when they installed the replacement steam generators in 2007. The NRC has been complicit in not providing the hearing, not properly documenting the modifications to St. Lucie 2 steam generators. And they have actually gone through a series of activities with the company over the ensuing 7 years that put the reactor outside the bounds of its licensed documents. In other words, they're running this reactor without the proper documentation. If you are going to run a nuclear reactor, you must run it by the book. I've said this before, nuclear reactor technology is inherently unforgiving. There are a number of reasons why there are significant procedures that must be followed. We have a very clear instance here where FPL did not follow the proper procedures. The NRC has gone along with it, and we are blowing the whistle on what they're doing with our filing. We are requesting a hearing, and we believe that we should be granted this hearing and that the NRC must make FPL go back and properly document the changes, allow the public to have a chance to respond to those changes, and they must bring the reactor into compliance before it's allowed to operate. That is what we filed. Let me also respond to a couple of what I know are going to be the anticipated cry back from the company. The company has tried to characterize us as, you know, anti-nuclear and just trying to shut down the reactor. If you look at what we're doing, we're not saying anything about St. Lucie Unit 1. St. Lucie Unit 1 has updated steam generators or replacement steam generators, but they followed the book in St. Lucie Unit 1. And as we have documented, and you will hear more about, St. Lucie 1 is not having problems. They're not having an unprecedented amount of damage happening at the St. Lucie Unit 1 replacement steam generators. But because of these modifications at St. Lucie Unit 2 with the replacement steam generators, because of the fact they didn't follow the proper procedures, the fact that there is some real questionable activity in some of the replacements, we are seeing now not only a violation of the license, but we're also seeing tangible physical evidence that this reactor is becoming significantly damaged with each round of operation. And that is unprecedented. It is highly unusual, and we believe is a serious safety issue that needs to be addressed by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. So I'll end my comments there. I'll turn it over to Arnie Gunnarsson, who is a nuclear engineer that has expertise and has looked very closely at this. And Arnie can explain a little bit more on the technical side of what is going on. Arnie?
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Steve. This is Arnie Gunnarsson, and for the record, it's S-E-N Gunnarsson. I'm the chief engineer at a company called Fairwinds, and there's an E in the middle of that too, F-A-I-R-E-W-I-N-D-S, up in Vermont. This is all about following the rules. I have a bachelor's and master's in nuclear and was a senior vice president in the nuclear industry, but I was also a licensed reactor operator. And the thing that's driven into you when you're in this industry is that you got to follow the rules. And that really didn't happen on St. Lucie 2, and that's really why we're here today. The rule in particular is something called 10 CFR, and that's 10 Code of Federal Regulations. That's the nuclear laws, 10 CFR. The particular one is something called 5059, and really what it allows the power plant to do is to make a like-for-like replacement. If something breaks, you can replace it in kind, and you don't have to notify the NRC. It's almost like what the Food and Drug Administration does or National Institute of Health when you have an organ transplant. You know, you try to match up the DNA of the donor so that you get a very close DNA match when you replace a heart, for instance. And that didn't happen at St. Lucie 2. St. Lucie 1, Florida Power and Light played by the rules and replace their steam generators early, well before St. Lucie 2. And they followed the rules. They had essentially a like-for-like replacement. They didn't remove this thing called a stay cylinder. They didn't add extra tubes. They basically replaced like-for-like. But on St. Lucie 2, that didn't happen. Florida Power and Light made enormous changes in the new steam generator that they transplanted into the old reactor. And as Steve said, the result is St. Lucie 1 is one of the best steam generators in the country, and St. Lucie 2 is the worst steam generator in the country. To give you an idea there, during this outage, they plugged 69 tubes just during this outage. They'll say, well, we've got thousands more. But most nuclear steam generators don't have any tubes plugged in their entire life, and certainly only a few in their entire life. And here St. Lucie 2 plugged 69 tubes in an 18-month period to give you an idea of how serious the problem is on St. Lucie 2. St. Lucie 1 hardly has any tubes plugged, and it played by the rules. It's really about that. There's a saying that applies here, and that's that with the NRC, it's easier to get forgiveness than it is to get approval. And I think that's a lesson all the nuclear licensees learn, but especially Florida Power and Light. They didn't want to get approval of these huge changes in St. Lucie 2, so they went out and did it, and now they're asking for forgiveness. But this is an industry where you've got to play by the rules, and I don't believe that that's happening. Last point is that this the problems at St. Lucie 2 are self-inflicted. This is the worst generator in the country, and it's because Florida Power and Light decided to not replace in kind, not do a like-for-like replacement, but to make enormous changes. And the NRC has known about this likely since the steam generator started to fail in 2009 with the first indications of severe problems. And ever since then, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission has been complicit in the process of claiming that the problems at St. Lucie 2 are in fact manageable. They're not. This steam generator is not going to make the end of its useful life. The damage is severe enough that over the next 10 years, it will wind up having to be replaced. And, you know, Floridians paid for this once, and they shouldn't have to pay for it twice. Okay, I'm going to hand off now to Diane Curran.
Hi, this is Diane Curran. I'm an attorney with the firm of Harmon, Curran, Spielberg, and Eisenberg in Washington, D.C., and I represent Southern Alliance for Clean Energy in this proceeding. I'd like to talk about the legal rules that apply here and what SACE is trying to accomplish with its hearing request. The rules involve public disclosure of important safety information and public participation. This is something, these two requirements are embedded in the Atomic Energy Act from 1954. In that law, when that law was being developed, the states wanted more control over the safety of nuclear reactors. And Congress made a bargain with the states and said, the federal government's going to keep control of oversight of nuclear reactors, which were very new at the time. And in exchange, Congress said, we will give the public, the state governments and members of the public, the right to a hearing on any the issuance or amendment of any operating license for or construction permit for a nuclear reactor, so that there would be a robust level of public participation in the licensing of reactors. This wasn't going to be something that just was done between the government and the licensees, but something in which the public would have a role. And typically, if a licensee wants to make major changes to a nuclear reactor, it must file a license amendment application. And in the application, which goes to the government and is therefore publicly disclosed, posted on the NRC website, the license applicant describes what exactly it wants to change and why that's not going to compromise safety. Then members of the public have the right to request a hearing if they are concerned, if they think there's issues that haven't been addressed, or they disagree. None of that happened here. This goes back to before 2007, when FP&L realized it had problems with its original steam generators and decided to replace them at Unit 2. And instead of putting in the same design steam generator, FP&L chose a substantially different design, one that actually had design features that had been explicitly disavowed in the original licensing documents. Instead of putting that information on the public record and saying, we're changing this and this is why, FP&L kept it a secret. FP&L kept all the detailed documents about the design changes at the reactor site, and what it submitted to the NRC was a summary that gave very little information, plus an amended basic licensing document that did not fully discuss all of these changes, and which was not made publicly available by the NRC because of post-September 11th concerns about sensitive information getting released. So as a result of this lack of disclosure of information, members of the public never knew what was happening with these changed steam generators. That information didn't come to light until a combination of things. One was the continual experience of tube denting at St. Lucie since these replacement steam generators were installed in 2007. And the other was that in the San Onofre case, where they also had steam generator tube problems, the company and NRC staff compared the problems at San Onofre with St. Lucie, and that was where it was first disclosed that indeed that major design changes had been made to the St. Lucie steam generators. What SACE is trying to get now is the hearing that it should have had before 2007, before these steam generators were installed. And in this hearing, we want the opportunity to talk about what the design changes were, and whether there's a relationship between them and the serious problems that they are having now since they've been installed. We think we're entitled to this hearing under the Atomic Energy Act, and that it should be done as soon as possible, and that in order to protect the integrity of the hearing process, which should have happened before these steam generators were installed, that the NRC should ensure that the questionable steam generators are not operated while the serious safety concerns are being investigated. And I think I will stop there.
Thank you very much to Steve, Arnie, and to Diane. And now I would like to go back to Dr. Stephen Smith just for a final summation of the many points we've just heard, and then he is going to open it up for question and answers. Steve?
Right. So, again, SACE's position here is do it by the book. We have three main points. Safety first. Nuclear technology is not inherently unsafe, but it is inherently unforgiving, and you must do it by the book. This is particularly relevant in Peninsula Florida, where you have a reactor that is, you know, within 50 miles of significant populations. Safety first. Second, the NRC must assure that the licensing guidelines that are used are followed and the procedures are followed. Do it by the book. And the NRC in this case clearly has not done it by the book. And the third point is there are hundreds of millions of dollars, potentially billions of dollars, that are on the line here because of imprudent decisions by the company, FP&L, to where they didn't follow the book, didn't follow the correct guidelines. They have put in a steam generator that is highly modified, that there wasn't the proper hearing. This is not just a clerical issue. It's not just a paperwork issue. This steam generator is experiencing unprecedented damage, more than any steam generator in the country. It will not reach its useful life. It will have to be pulled out prematurely. FP&L will likely come back to the Florida Public Service Commission for a rubber stamp approval on a replacement steam generator at the expense of the ratepayers. The ratepayers should not bear the cost. This is a financially imprudent decision that has been done. They mismanaged this. They didn't follow the record. We're blowing the whistle on it. If this reactor gets shut down, which we think it may need to because of what's happening, it is not because the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy is after FP&L or after St. Lucie 2. We're not saying anything about St. Lucie 1. We're saying do it by the book. And if you can't do it by the book, then fix it and get it done right. And it won't be our fault. It'll be the power company's fault because they didn't follow the rules. So we'll turn it over now for Q&A.
Thank you, Steve, and to each of our speakers. We're opening the lines now, and the easiest way to do this is if you have a question, please hit ** on your phone. That's going to unmute your line and should keep other lines quiet so we don't have a lot of background noise. And if you can just say your name and your outlet before you ask your question. Please go ahead.
Hi, Bruce. Can you Ritchie. Hear me? This is Bruce Ritchie with the Florida Current. Can you hear me all right?
Yes, we got you.
Hello. Okay. Stephen, you just touched on it very much at the end. Is still an important underlying issue here, the nuclear cost recovery law in Florida?
Well, if you remember, FP&L bragged about the fact that using the nuclear cost recovery law is what they said allowed them to do this steam generator replacement. They talked a lot about the fact that this was an example of where the nuclear cost recovery law was actually bringing value to Florida consumers quickly, whereas, you know, we had argued and continued to have concerns about the law because there's reactors that are being paid for out of ratepayers' pockets but may never be built. FP&L said, well, we don't agree with that, but let me show you, with our steam generator upgrades, we are bringing value in real time. We believe in the long run that that will be proved to be a blatantly false statement, that they rushed this, they didn't follow the rules, they're causing accelerated damage on St. Lucie Unit 2, the steam generators. So that is an issue. It's not necessarily the primary issue, but I think it is an example, again, of where the company has misled the public about what are the facts. And the facts are that if this steam generator, which we anticipate will happen, will have to be prematurely pulled out, or if the NRC does what they're supposed to do, which is force them to deal with the modifications from violating the license, it will likely cost somebody. We think it should be the shareholders of FP&L, not the ratepayers of Florida, hundreds of millions, if not billions of dollars, to fix this problem. And it was because FP&L rushed into doing the steam generator replacement and didn't follow the rules.
Thank you.
Yeah, hi, this is Bill Freeburn calling from Platts in Washington. I'm just trying to figure out, it sounds like the steam generators are operating with a certain number of plugged tubes. You're saying that they will have to be replaced in fairly short order, these new steam generators. What's the basis for that? Can't in fact they operate with hundreds of plugged tubes for long periods of time?
Yeah, this is Arnie here. They already have hundreds of plugged tubes, and you know, if the last outage is any indication, they're plugging more, you know, 70 an outage. Now, they've said that the rate did not go up, but the rate didn't go down either. So, you know, if you extrapolate out, 70 per refueling outage out in time for 10 years, you're looking at there's about 7 refueling outages out there. You're looking at another 500 tubes that have to be plugged on the top of the several hundred tubes that are already in the generator. At some point, it becomes it's likely it won't be able to generate 100% power. But the other part of that is that it becomes unsafe. One of the things that I talked about in my report is that both the NRC and Florida Power and Light are not including in their analysis the fact that the tubes are rattling more with time. In other words, as these dents are getting bigger, which means that the tube can vibrate side to side even greater. And over time, over the next several refueling outages, that creates some pretty serious safety problems that neither the NRC nor Florida Power and Light are willing to address. The same thing, that same type of tube-to-tube damage is what prevented San Onofre from operating when it was shut down in 2012. Right now, we're not seeing tube-to-tube damage. We're seeing tube-to-tube sheet damage, which Florida Power and Light has acknowledged has a 5% chance per year to have a tube fail. So they're already at a 5% failure rate with the kind of damage they have now, and the vibrational amplitude is getting greater with time and is not getting less.
All right, thank you.
This is Matt Bandick from SNL. I had a question regarding the schedule. So I know that there's going to be another round of responses from FPL and the NRC staff, and then another response from you all, and then the commission's decision. Do you all have any ideas for when those things are going to happen?
This is Diane Curran. Just to clarify that what FPNL and the staff are responding to is our amended hearing request, which we filed just recently after we finally received a copy of the updated final safety analysis report, the basic licensing document that FPNL had submitted in 2008, but which the NRC wasn't publicly releasing. And that confirmed many of our deductions that FPNL had made major design changes to the reactor, and it even identified one new one that we hadn't known about. So we put that information into the record, and that's, you know, limited information. It's confirmatory information that essentially says we were correct in our initial hearing request. We don't expect that a whole lot of new issues are going to be raised in the responses that FPNL and the staff make to our amended hearing request, just because we were just presenting confirmatory information. After that, we really don't know when the commissioners will rule on our request. They have the discretion to take as long as they want, but of course, you know, the delay, any delay that they make just adds to the uncertainty about the ultimate fate of these steam generators and the safety problems they're causing.
But the decision would be at least beyond 2 weeks, because there's going to be there's going to be 7 days for another response and then 7 days for another one?
Yeah, I think it'll be a matter of weeks or months. It'll be months, I think, because there's quite a bit of there's a big factual record to review. There's a lot of contentious legal issues. This is a big issue for the nuclear industry. This is not the first licensee that's tried to make major changes to its operation without getting a license amendment. So this is something that the NRC commissioners are going to pay close attention to.
Can you explain, this is Mary Ellen Kloss with the Miami Herald, can you explain what is involved in the rationale that, in the, I guess, what legal precedent there is for this kind of modification? It sounds as though when you're saying that they need to replace something with like-minded or a like technology or a similar design, that there is room for some modification there. And you're also, you know, it seems to me that the NRC is this regular, it's supposed to be the oversight board, and yet you're saying it's not doing its job correctly. But certainly they must have their defense. They must assume they are doing the proper oversight.
This is Arnie here, and I think maybe Diane will want to get in too. But this code 5059 allows you to make a like-for-like replacement. The other term is called fit, form, function. It's got to have the same fit, the same form, and perform the same function. But everybody calls it like-for-like. Anyway, what it's like changing the tires on your car. You know, if you want to go from Firestone to Bridgeport or Goodyear, nobody cares. You're allowed to make those changes routinely. But if you decide you're going to put 28-inch truck wheels on your car, you got to run it through inspection again because you fundamentally altered the car. And what happened at St. Lucie 1 was they essentially replaced a combustion engineering steam generator with almost the identical design. This one was built by Babcock Wilcox in Canada, and it retained all of the original features, this thing called the stay cylinder and things like that. But on St. Lucie 2, they chose a different vendor and ripped out some of the old structures that were in the generator and in the process added 588 more tubes to the generator and made other changes too. That in fact, their own license taught against. Their license said that you needed to use something called an egg crate, and yet on the new generators, they use something called a broached tube design. So basically, instead of replacing Firestone with Goodyear, they went out and they amped up the steam generator, and now it's essentially being rejected by the plant. You know, it's rattling itself to death over a very short period of time. But maybe I'm going to hand it off to Diane here, and you can talk a little bit more about the legal issues in the NRC.
Sure. Yes, there is some flexibility, as Arnie's saying, but we are not talking at all about minor design changes. And I just go back to the issue of what kind of supports that the steam generators use to hold the tubes. If you go back to the original final safety analysis report, which is the basic licensing document that FPNL submitted to the NRC when it got its first license, it said in there that FPL plans to use what's called lattice supports or egg crate supports for all these many tubes. And there's a specific statement in there that FPNL is going to eliminate, it uses the words eliminate, the eliminate plate supports for the tubes because it's concerned about whether they raise safety problems. Then in this steam generator redesign, FPNL swapped out the lattice or egg crate supports for plate supports, the very type of supports that it had said it did not want to use because of safety concerns. Now, if you're going to make a change like that, where you've made an explicit statement in the original licensing document that you're going to use a certain kind of equipment to avoid safety problems, if you're going to use exactly what you said you weren't going to use, that's time to do a license amendment. And the rules are very clear about that. So that, I think that's a good example. Another example is the tube sheet, which is a major safety component in the steam generator, now has 588 additional holes. And the tube sheet is supposed to be able to flex and protect against if there's an accident and protect against release of contamination. Putting 588 holes in this tube sheet is something that changes its ability to flex. That's another example, and Arnie discusses that in his declaration, of where the safety function of a component changes as a result of what was done. That's something that needs to be discussed. And perhaps if these issues had been discussed prior to 2007, we wouldn't be having a steam generator with the highest level of steam generator tube wear in the country. I guess I'll stop there.
You know, there's another example there. This is Arnie again. The example is on Palo Verde, which is a plant out in Arizona. Palo Verde added more tubes, but it went in with a license amendment and notified the world that it was changing the plant. They didn't add it to the center. They retained the stay cylinder, and they added the tubes on the periphery. But the point is that they used the licensing process. And the NRC asked all the appropriate questions. And Palo Verde has very few damaged tubes either. So, you know, when you play by the rules, it's good for everybody. It's good for the public health and safety, and it keeps your plant operating longer. But when you choose to ignore the rules, you run the risk of quickening damage and safety issues as well. So, okay, Arnie, off.
And Mary Ellen, this is Steve. When we were reviewing the documents, one of the things that just struck me was there's actually some of the forms that FPNL has provided to document some of the things that they were doing. And literally, there's a place there where they just mark through a key component called the stay cylinder and then handwrite some little notes out to the side of the page. Okay, this stay cylinder is a very large component of the nuclear reactor, weighing thousands of pounds. And it's not just something you just kind of scratch through in the margin and sort of write off to the side. I was shocked because you think that the nuclear industry and the nuclear reactor guys are going to document this all very well, and all the paperwork and everything is going to be clearly done and updated and this kind of stuff. And the more we dug into this, the more we saw examples like this where they cut corners and they didn't follow the rules properly. And it's just, it's mind-boggling to think of the implications of what they're doing here.
Thank you for that.
Hi, this is Susan Salisbury at the Palm Beach Post. Do you have any idea how much the replacement generators for Unit 2 cost, and like, what was FPL's motivation? Why didn't they just use the same type they used in Unit 1? I mean, were they saving money, saving time, or what was going on with that decision? Was it just a mistake? Or
This is Arne Gunderson here. I can't speak to their motivation, but I can tell you what happened out at San Onofre, where they did a similar thing, where they removed the stay cylinder and they added extra tubes. And the theory at San Onofre was that they wanted to run the plant for 80 years. And they figured by having 588 extra tubes, they could have an adequate margin for plugging, not just for 60, but for 80 years. So it appears that, and this order was released in 2003, the decision to make this new steam generator was awarded to Areva in 2003, at the same time that San Onofre was going through the same process. So it looks like the nuclear industry was planning on building in extra tubes in their plants, not so they could get to 60 years, but so they could get to 80 years. But in fact, at San Onofre, which made the same design mistakes, they removed the stay cylinder and added extra tubes into the center of the generator. It's exactly what St. Lucie 2 did. That backfired. And St. Lucie 2 has plugged almost the number of tubes that they added in for extra margin already. So it's problematic. Unit 1, on the other hand, was fabricated about 7 or 8 years earlier and didn't do that. And it's running just fine.
Well, if Floridians do have to pay for it, or the Next Era Energy shareholder, how much would it cost to replace this thing at this point? Like, what are we looking at?
Something on the order of $400 million.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Yeah, at least. At least.
Yeah.
So we're wasting the money that was already spent on this uprate and the steam generator replacement. And it will cost $400 million to fix
decision.
It.
Right. That's why it's an imprudent decision, because if there had been a proper hearing, I think some of the motivation of the company would have been brought out in the course of justifying the modification. And I think there would have been some external scrutiny on what they were doing. And I think that the ratepayers of Florida and potentially the shareholders of NextEra would have had at least some level of assurance that they weren't making it up as they go, so to speak, and there was an opportunity for those who may not be financially motivated by this to take a look at it and understand the full range of implications. And as Diane indicated earlier, you know, that was the intent of the law, would be that there would be broad public participation and a chance to review license amendments because of the inherent nature of the nuclear reactors. And FPL, for whatever reason, chose to circumvent the law and circumvent what was done needed to be done here.
And FPL said recently the uprate had no impact on the steam generator tubes. Do you agree or disagree with that? Because they've said that this uprate was groundbreaking, and no one had ever done such a big uprate before. And so, was there any impact from the uprate or not?
Yes, this is Arne. If you think of these steam generator tubes as a blade of grass, you blow air across and they make them whistle. You know, the tube vibrates. When they upgraded the reactor, they pumped about 12% more water through and around the tubes, causing them to vibrate even more, so that the rate at which they're damaged is worse with the uprate than it was before the uprate. But even before the uprate, they were being damaged. But the rate at which they're being damaged now is greater because of the extra flow, causing the tubes to flutter more.
But they just said rate wasn't great.
FP&L actually, in their own documentation, in their own words, predicts to some degree that they're going to have as much as 24% more wear from the uprate. So they actually anticipated that there would be, because of the things that Arnie is stating. The other thing, just to be very clear here, is that FP&L has yet to release the full evaluation of this outage. I know they brought some of you into the reactor. They talked to you a little bit. They gave some preliminary numbers. But no one has seen a full documentation, and they haven't fully provided the evaluation of this outage yet. So there may be more information yet to come public. And that was one of the things that we wanted them to accelerate and provide soon, because of the unprecedented amount of wear going into this outage, and that we asked for and were rejected. But we believe that there's going to be more information in that final report, and we look forward to it. And they did have other complications in this outage, as you know. We won't dwell on those right now, but the outage ended up being extended for several different reasons, some other problems they ran into. But this is a steam generator in trouble, and for them to say otherwise is completely avoiding and misleading the public about what's going on. This steam generator in St. Lucie Unit 2 is in trouble.
And I heard you kind of get a parenthetical thought in there, too, and that's that if the plant had run at its original power, the damping would have begun to slow down. What they did was, by amping the power up by 12%, the damage rate continued at the same rate. So they're saying there was no increase in the damage rate, which is true, but the rate, the number of tubes that exhibited dents per 18-month outage, continues to trend upward on a straight line. The curve hasn't been bent. This damage continues to go, and it's going up and to the right every outage, and will continue to do so, exacerbated by the 12% extra flow.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, this is Ivan Penn at the Tampa Bay Times.
We got you. Go ahead, Ivan.
Can you all tell us, when you mention the stay cylinder, what does the stay cylinder do in regard to the tube vibration? Or how would it have prevented the tubes from vibrating?
Yeah, the purpose of the stay cylinder, it's a huge column, almost like, you know, on the front of the Parthenon. It's a huge steel column at the bottom of the steam generator, and it's designed to keep the tube sheet from flexing. And the tube sheet is about a 100-ton piece of metal that the tubes are drilled into. I'm getting way too complicated here. But originally, the stay cylinder was to keep this tube sheet from flexing. So in that purpose, it had no purpose on tube vibration. But when they removed the stay cylinder and in its place put 588 tubes in its place, that took the heat, which had been distributed all the way around the old steam generator, and moved more of it to the center of the generator. It moved about 4 or 5% more heat to the center of the generator. And what that does is create a lot more bubbles and a lot more turbulent flow around these 588 new tubes. And those, and it's those extra bubbles and extra flow around the 588 new tubes that create this this dynamic instability, this this vibration that's occurring inside the generator. So the removing the stay cylinder in and of itself would not do that either. The at Waterford, which is in Louisiana, they removed their stay cylinder, but they didn't add new tubes because they realized that that would create a thermal hydraulic problem. There'd be too much heat in the center of the generator. And so there were people who foresaw this problem of adding too much heat to the center of the generator. But the three that did it are St. Lucie 2 and San Onofre 2 and 3, all of which, until St. Lucie, St. Lucie 2 is now the worst in the country, and San Onofre 2 and 3 were of equal damage when they were permanently shut down last year.
Did FPL do anything to compensate or try to do anything to compensate for not having the stay cylinder in the replacement steam generators?
No. Hang on here, Ivan. Let me rephrase that. At the bottom of the generator, to keep the tube sheet from flexing, they claim they added extra welds to something called a divider plate. So they claim that they beefed up the divider plate. But as far as what happened between the tubes and the vibrational issues that could have been and should have been anticipated, no, they did nothing to prevent that.
Okay, thanks.
Do we have any further questions? I believe each reporter who has identified him or herself has asked a question, but we still have time if there are further questions. Okay, well, for those who are still with us, I just want to let you know two quick things. We do have a Learn About page specific to St. Lucie Reactor, and there's a lot of information up there, including our filings and many other links. And I believe I sent that information to most of you directly today, and it is also as part of the press statement we sent out shortly before this call began. We will also conclude this telepress conference at this time, but post the recording of it later today on our website for more information. If there are no further questions or comments, we will go ahead and conclude the telepress conference. Thank you all for attending. And if you have further questions, you may always reach us through SACE's media line, which is area code 865-235-1448. And thank you very much to our attendees and to our speakers today.